Good morning, Joe Trilling filling in for Jess Strutt today on Focus. How often have you sat in your doctor's surgery waiting just to have your prescription refilled? Does it frustrate you? It can be expensive if your doctor doesn't bulk bill, and it also costs you time. Have you ever wished you were able to just pop into your local pharmacy instead? Well, the health department recently conducted a review into community pharmacy ownership, which suggested pharmacies and pharmacists are underutilised and should have their scope widened to include doing things like issuing repeat prescriptions, supporting people with mental health issues, and be allowed to prescribe for chronic diseases like asthma and diabetes. If you think about the relationship between doctors and pharmacists, you probably assume they work together in a kind of symbiosis. Doctors prescribe, pharmacists dispense. But lately, doctors say pharmacists have been encroaching on what they see as medical turf, and this review has some doctors concerned. So what role should pharmacies play? Are they just a conduit for medicines, or should they be given more rights when it comes to dispensing and even treatment? That's our focus today.
This is Focus on ABC Radio Perth.
Joining me in the studio are Dr. David Mountain, ex-AMAWA President, and Andrew Niao, WA Branch President of the Pharmacy Guild, and Stephen Duckett, Director Health Program at the Grattan Institute, is in our Adelaide studios. Good morning. Andrew, pharmacists study for 4 years, followed by a further year training in a pharmacy. What skills do they come out of with that?
Pharmacists are trained medication experts. They are trained to deliver medication, advise around medication, decide what sometimes the best medication actually is. They go on further to look after health. They look after some sort, because pharmacy is the most common place that people will actually visit. So 140,000 West Australians visit a pharmacy each day somewhere across the state. So broadened beyond the actual medication, the questions they get asked are obviously around some sort of diagnosis at times. And if they're not able to, they refer on further.
And in your view, are those skills being fully utilised at the moment?
No, not at all.
So you think there's scope for more to be done?
Yeah, most definitely.
You said a lot of people are going into their local pharmacy. So what kind of relationship do pharmacists develop with their customers?
Oh, well, as I said, we see them very, very regularly, some as regularly as every single day. So we not only know their name, we know the name of their mum and dad and their pet dogs and their pet goldfish and everything else that's around that. We know about their family backgrounds. We know about them.
It is
named community pharmacy for that reason, because they're well and truly entrenched within a community setting.
You're a pharmacist. What drew you into that field?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, Joe. Both my parents are accountants. But I have a very, very close uncle who's actually a pharmacist who, I don't know if he ever said to me, I think you should be a pharmacist, but I think it was always thereabouts. I was around it, and I decided upon it, and that's sort of the direction I decided to go in.
And did you ever consider medicine, or pharmacy was what you wanted to do?
No, that never really inspired me.
Now, the health department has recently conducted this review. What would you like pharmacists to be able to do?
All I'd really like pharmacists to be able to do, Joe, is be able to practice at the top of their scope. So we'd like to do what we are actually trained to do.
So the review is saying increased involvement in hospital discharge, supporting people with mental health, prescribing for chronic illnesses and so on. You feel like you have the capacity to do that?
Most definitely.
David Mountain.
Hello there.
You're a doctor.
I am.
What are your thoughts?
Well, we're very disturbed by this process. I mean, what it's really doing is going to further fragment healthcare. We're supposedly trying to do joined up healthcare with, you know, less fragmentation, less bits and pieces of medicine. And instead, what these sort of programs will do is actually make it worse. So we'll have people coming in having bits and pieces done. There won't be good communication. Won't be going back to the GP who's supposed to organise and coordinate care. And people will, I think, end up with getting overprescribed and given all sorts of extras that they don't really need. Won't actually improve their healthcare outcomes, but it will actually increase costs and drive costs to the patient, at least, and maybe to the system.
Well, if you see a doctor that doesn't bulk bill as a patient, you have an out-of-pocket expense of around $30. Yep. So if you just want to go in and have your contraceptive pill filled.
Yeah. There's very few appointments with a doctor that don't have a value-added bonus to it, which is that they actually check how other things in your life are going. They check whether your blood pressure's up, whether there are other risk factors that have happened while you're on the pill, how is it going on the pill, how are there other techniques that might be useful. So like each engagement is not just about filling the pill. Almost invariably, something else happens during that process. And that's why you're supposed to have a family doctor who actually knows what's going on in your life and also knows all the other health problems that you've had in the past.
But Andrew did point out that he sees customers over and over and builds up a relationship.
I'm sure that's some. I don't think that that's the likely long-term scenario for most patients. And the idea that pharmacists are going to be managing chronic disease or mental health problems, I think is a very dangerous step too far.
Stephen Duckett from the Grattan Institute, we'll bring you in here. Where do you sit on that? On this? Is there scope for pharmacists to be doing more?
Absolutely, but we've got to actually put it in context. We've got to say not only should pharmacists be doing more, but how should they be doing more? And so I think David is absolutely right. With the GP is the coordinator of the care, person with chronic illness comes back to the GP regularly. But then the GP should be able to say, look, I trust the local pharmacist also, and I agree that you don't need to come back to me every time you want your script filled, but you do need to come back to me maybe every now and again. And so the treatment of the patient can truly be shared, where the patient doesn't need to go to see to the GP every time, doesn't need to face that huge out-of-pocket, but can go to a professional who knows something about them and knows something about why they've got this medication and, you know, can assess them and say, whoops, well, I think actually you need to go back to the GP now rather than just having this script filled. So it truly should be a partnership where the pharmacist does what the pharmacist can do, freeing up the GP to have more time and benefiting the patient both by no out-of-pocket and also by the convenience, you know, there's not as much time to get an appointment and so on at a pharmacist.
On the text, Howard is saying exactly that. I have a medical condition that requires me to have a prescription drug every day. Why do I have to go to the doctor to get the prescription repeated? Why can't the chemist do the repeats? But they're looking at is also things like looking after people with mental health and prescribing for illnesses like asthma and diabetes. David, you've said you're not happy about that. Stephen, you think that chemists, pharmacists could do that?
Well, I'm not sure that mental health is where I'd start. That sure, many mental health conditions are managed with medication, but we do need to emphasise the counselling, the help with the mental health person, and pharmacist training, and they're well educated in this area, is in medication and the effects of medication and the counter effects of medication and so on. And I think that's the area where they are specialised, that's the area where they ought to focus. But with asthma, for example, you know, preventers, I think, is what they're not allowed to dispense. And, you know, again, we should be using pharmacists for what they can do in conjunction with the GP.
Asthma, I think, is a particularly, difficult thing to imagine why, you know, pharmacy involved in that. It's a difficult condition where you need to have, you know, proper long-term medication. Things change during asthma. One of the biggest problems is that people use their inhalers, you know, acute inhalers too frequently and don't use their preventers on a long-term basis, don't have proper management plans or don't use their management plans. That needs to have somebody coordinating who really understands the long-term trajectory of the disease, knows when to refer up for a specialist review. I don't think that that's really what should be managed in the middle of a pharmacy. I think almost laughable that that's one of the conditions. And I think diabetes is pretty much the same.
We do see pharmacists attached to some medical practices, and Stephen did talk about the relationship between a GP and a pharmacist. Surely that relationship can work well and there can be communication between the two. Andrew?
So I think that's the key here. If we go through the report, the ownership review that you referred to, Joe, and it's a very lengthy report, so I don't think we need to go through all 120-odd pages of it. But it does talk about some model of prescribing. Now, we can forget what that terminology actually is, but we're looking at somehow improving the health system because we have a health system that is not necessarily giving the best possible outcome. It's a fantastic health system, is one of the best in the world, but we do need to tweak it with the pressures that we have on the hospital system currently. With the key to that, as David said, and I do totally agree, it is a communication between the pharmacist on the ground and the GP on the ground. And that is crucial with that. If we look at asthma in particular, from a pharmacy perspective, the gap that we're seeing is that people are coming in for their Ventolin, they think that's it, and as much as we're telling people, no, you can't use too much Ventolin, you do need to use a Preventer, if they're not going to see the GP, that's where sometimes you get gaps in the healthcare.
We're talking about the changing role of pharmacists. Doctors are increasingly under pressure and have to see more and more patients. So if a patient came in to have something, a prescription filled, you would be happy, Andrew, as a pharmacist, saying, actually, you need to go back to your GP if you weren't comfortable with that.
That's what's happening right now. I mean, whilst we're talking about prescribing and that sort of stuff, let's not forget that there are scheduled medications, registered poisons, that a pharmacist currently looks after. So with that, we can actually, in regards, prescribe that medication, and if we are uncomfortable to treat that medication, treat that condition that has been presented to us, we refer on to the GPs. In the same way, the GPs will actually then refer further to a specialist if need be.
Jeff has called in. What did you want to say, Jeff?
Doctors and chemists, I use where they interact together closely for me. But story in point, 20 years ago or so, I went to a GP in West Perth, hadn't seen him before. He said, right, I'll take your blood pressure and listen to your chest. I was looking for something to cope with hay fever symptoms. He diagnosed an irregular heartbeat, which subsequently has necessitated a heart valve replacement 10 years ago. Now, I don't think a chemist would pick that up, but, you know, all credit to the doctor who, you know, went through his checklist for a new patient. And, I don't think chemists should have that responsibility either.
Thanks, Jeff.
That story, I think, is one of the reasons why, you know, integrated healthcare is important, and when people are coming in what seems like just a regular visit, why people actually do other things while you come in. The other issue is that we're completely happy to have integrated pharmacy, in general practice in particular. We think that pharmacists can value-add a lot more, particularly, you know, things like nursing home, drug checks, those sort of things, making sure that they, you know, they're integrated and that the federal government actually start to pay for things like drug checks integrated to pharmacy. And we'd be very happy for pharmacies to be owned by doctors and for those services to all be available on-site and improve access to patients.
We'll get on to ownership in a minute. With vaccines for illnesses like meningococcal and measles and whooping cough, they've been available in WA in pharmacies since August. I understand pharmacists had to undertake an online course and around 250 pharmacists have taken up that option. Andrew, how's that working?
So that was a pretty recent announcement. We never really expect the demand to be huge in this area, really because of the schools program and the National Immunisation Program, a lot of it's been covered. I don't have any current numbers around this. I'm sorry, Joe. But certainly it is available. You are correct.
Stephen, how's that working, chemists giving out vaccines across the country?
So it's already the case in, I think, Queensland and Victoria, that this can happen, and it's popular. So the more, where I come from, is the more places you can get the vaccines and immunisation generally, the better, because these are preventive interventions, and you want people for people. So if they have to, you know, schedule a visit with a GP, worry about the out of pockets, all those sorts of things, they're less likely to do it. So I had my immunisation for the flu this year. It was done by a nurse in a sort of a flu centre. And, really convenient, and that's what we want with these things. So I'm very supportive of pharmacies being able to do this.
in Western Australia this year, the numbers aren't finalised because it's obviously still only sort of middle of September, but we think that the current estimation is about 130,000 vaccines in Western Australia were administered going through a community pharmacy. That was done because there was a change of our scope. Without that, in one of the worst flu seasons ever, we just wouldn't have had those numbers. When flu first came out, when flu vaccines were first developed through pharmacy in 2015, a survey was done and 60% of the people had either never had a flu vaccine before or it was definitely the first time they're going through their community pharmacy.
I just have to, there was a rush on the flu vaccines. A lot of pharmacies took up most of the supply. So, in fact, GPs couldn't give out vaccines to their patients because there was just no supply left. So that caused a problem at the beginning of the season, particularly.
But there was obvious. Also a short supply for pharmacy as well. That was a national problem.
Anyway, so people wanted to go to their GP, which we think is the right place for them to get their whole care. The other thing is if you want to give out vaccines, you have to be able to manage the rare side effects and problems. And we've had problems with people coming in, who have been treated as though they've had anaphylaxis. In fact, they just had a faint, but given adrenaline injections in pharmacies. There are downsides to sort of the willy-nilly approach to giving everything. The other thing is everything actually documented? So where does it go to so that the GP knows the vaccines have been given?
Well, we have My Health Record now, so that's a centralised system. But just on that, surely when the pharmacist is administering the vaccine, they can give a warning and say, if you have any of these, see your GP?
If you're going to have an anaphylaxis, it's going to happen. But the problem is it was over-treatment. The patient didn't have anaphylaxis. They just felt faint and wonky and still got an adrenaline injection before they came to hospital.
It's 22 past 10. On the text, Joe, 2 points. The idea that pharmacists are the only ones that oversell is wrong. I recently saw a new doctor for a repeat asthma prescription and came away with referrals for mammogram, bone density scan and a colonoscopy. And some years ago, I was prescribed an anti-inflammatory by a doctor in spite of telling her I was severely allergic to NSAIDs. She said this one was different. I spoke with my pharmacist who told me I would still be allergic to it. I discovered later this drug had been intensely marketed to GPs. Thanks, Julia. David?
Sorry, again, that story, the three things that were offered there are all things that would have been about age-related screening programs that are recommended things. So she was actually given the best benefit of coming in and seeing a GP, and she may not have been explained particularly well, which is non-steroidals do not all cross-react, so it depends on what type of reaction. So the allergic response is to a very specific drug, so another non-steroidal will not necessarily cause the same reaction.
On Focus this morning, we're talking about the changing role of pharmacists. Now, Stephen mentioned Queensland, and I understand in Queensland there's a trial where pharmacists are treating urinary tract infections. Stephen, how is that working?
I'm sorry, I'm not really on top of that, but again, what they've been doing in Queensland is they've been carefully monitoring and evaluating each extension. They've done a series of extensions over the last 5 years, I think, and each time they've done it, they've been careful to look at what the implications are and how it's all working. But I don't know what they're doing with the urinary tract infection one.
We are, again, we've got an epidemic of overprescribing. We've got superbugs, we're overdiagnosis, and we're opening up new prescribers of antibiotics basically just on symptoms. It's just not good ongoing medical care to keep on expanding the number of ways that you can give out antibiotics.
Andrew, is a pharmacy actually set up to do that? I'm wondering how you would diagnose something like a UTI in a pharmacy. Are there consulting rooms? How would that actually work?
Currently, there's about 70% of pharmacies that have a private consulting room, and that number is actually increasing very, very rapidly. What was your other question?
Just how you would go about actually diagnosing something like that
It's hard to go into real specifics around that right now, but as with the trial, that trial in Queensland hasn't actually started yet, so there's been no prescription written as such so far, to the best of my knowledge, but there'll be protocols written up that will be approved all down the track, so the risk is very low.
On the text, Mick says, last weekend, my daughter, who has a long-term autoimmune disorder, ran out of medication. She presented a script to the pharmacy to be told it couldn't be filled because it was slightly out of date. She was forced to go to her doctor, which not only don't bulk bill on the weekend, but they charge a $20 surcharge. So she was out of pocket $95 for a 3-minute consultation. Surely, where people have a long-term condition, it would be simply a matter of the pharmacist asking a few questions and verifying the request. Why are people with long-term conditions forced to revisit the doctor every 6 months for a script when they can visit a specialist once a year? Stephen, your thoughts on that?
She's absolutely right. That's exactly the right question to ask. $95 is outrageous for a 3-minute consultation where, it's all very well to say, oh, look, every consultation is important. They do blood pressure and et cetera, et cetera. Well, I don't think they probably did that in 3 minutes. And she's absolutely right. Why did she need to have that doctor's visit? It was inconvenient to her. It was expensive to her. And the pharmacist should have been able to provide that continuity in consultation with the GP.
Yeah, on face value, if it's only 3 minutes, that's right. But I mean, it is a free market out there. Unlike pharmacies, GPs can set up anywhere. There are no rules forcing practices to be 2 kilometres apart or 5 or whatever it is. So the fact is that if you really think the service is not right, you have plenty of options in most places.
Let's get on to ownership. Stephen, who can own a pharmacist and how is it regulated?
So at the moment, the various states regulate the ownership of pharmacies, and there have been in all states, not in the territories, but in all states, pharmacies can only be owned by pharmacists, if they're companies, they can only be owned by companies which are essentially dominated by pharmacists. And secondly, each state has limits on the number of pharmacies a pharmacist can own in that state, and I'm not sure of the number in Western Australia, but essentially a single pharmacist can only own, let's say, 47 pharmacies across Australia if they own so many in Queensland, so many in Victoria, so many in New South Wales and so on. These rules are really, really strange. So we've got the situation where a pharmacist can own a medical practice, but a doctor can't own a pharmacy. They're really out of date rules and regulations that should have been thrown in the dustbin of history when we did the competition law reforms a decade ago.
Andrew, why should pharmacists have a monopoly on owning pharmacies?
This has been an ongoing argument for as long as I think pharmacies have been around, Joe. Pharmacists are the trained experts in this area. They are the ones who are the medication experts. They are the ones who, if they're the owner, they are the ones who will actually hold the responsibility for the safe supply of medication. The regulation is there just to protect the consumer. They're not there to protect the pharmacy, right? At the moment, pharmacists do know their place in the healthcare system. They make decisions at times to their own economic detriment, because they know that's the right thing to do and that's what they're trained to do. If in the event we allow the pharmacies to be owned by non-pharmacists, you are then driven by a profit to a shareholder, and I just don't think it's going to be benefit healthcare.
The recent government review does seem to support staying with legislation that dictates pharmacies must be owned by a pharmacist. We'll continue this with you, David, in just a moment. Joe Trilling filling in for Jess Strutt today on Focus on ABC Radio Perth. We were just talking about ownership, which is being reviewed. David, your thoughts on that?
Well, we look on with some admiration, I think, at the Pharmacy Guild's ability to use relatively small carrots and a pretty big stick to maintain their monopoly on pharmacy ownership over many years. The politicians have rarely been broken for cover or tried to do anything different, and they sign up every 5 years for a new monopoly, which is completely anti-competitive and doesn't improve access for patients to pharmacy products. And, in fact, doesn't really work for the whole of the pharmacy profession. It really just works for the pharmacy owners.
Well, in the US, you see doctors being allowed to own pharmacists. Can't it create too many conflicts of interest?
We don't think so. In fact, it actually works better because then you've got pharmacy within the same practice, same environment. You've actually got pharmacists who can actually then use all their other skills for all the patients that come to that practice. Yes, you need to make sure that dispensing and providing the medications are separated so that there isn't an incentive to overprescribe. But I don't think that's really a likely scenario. The fact is that we already have lots of situations where people have to manage those conflicts.
We did hear on the text earlier someone saying they felt their GP had overprescribed.
Yeah, but that wasn't overprescribing. That was actually doing all the evidence-based things that were available for that patient at that age, and it was a there was no overselling there. There was no incentive. They don't make money out of any of those things that they were offering.
Stephen, your thoughts?
So we've got to distinguish between the ownership and the fact that there is a pharmacist in the pharmacy. So whoever owns it, the pharmacist will be there. The pharmacist will be taking professional accountability for the professional services that are there, and the pharmacist is improperly influenced and so on. They're subject to the penalties of unprofessional contact by the registration board. But I'm with David on this, Joe. I think there's, you know, why on earth is it that, as I said, doctors, pharmacists can own medical practices, but doctors can't own pharmacies. Pharmacists can own dental practices. You know, it is just absurd that we're saying that ownership of everything. I think it's the only area of the economy where a particular profession is the only person who's allowed own.
On the phone 1300 222 720, Dr. Colin Hughes has called in. Good morning, Colin.
Yeah, good morning.
What did you want to say?
Well, first of all, I'd like to support the Pharmacy Guild in that last little debate about pharmacists owning pharmacies. This has been a catastrophic mistake by the federal government to allow other people to own general practice. And it's why patients can't go and see a GP anymore and why they are charged $95 for a three-minute consultation. Because it may surprise you to know that the largest chain of bulk billing clinics in Australia is now owned by a Singapore company whose headquarters are in the Bahamas, and they take 85% of taxpayers' money through Medicare, and any profits go offshore and no taxes paid in Australia. The doctors are signed to contracts forcing them to see one patient every 6 minutes. Now, this is absolutely ludicrous. But that's not what I really wanted to talk to you about. I wanted to say the pharmacists should be allowed to prescribe antibiotics. I belong to a group called Antimicrobial Resistance Aware. We know that 35% of patients' scripts for antibiotics by general practitioners are not indicated. In other words, the general practitioner basically goes along with what the patient says. I need an antibiotic, doc. Sure, that's fine. I can get you in and out of my surgery in less than 6 minutes by doing that. But there is new technology that's groundbreaking that's been discovered at PathWest here in Western Australia. This is a machine called a PCR tester. What that basically means is that you can test the DNA of bugs. So a patient comes in with a supposed urinary tract infection. The pharmacist will have access to this machine. Within 1 hour, that machine will be able to tell you that, yes, this patient definitely has a urinary tract infection. This is far better than any test that any GP can do by using a dipstick or sending the test off to a laboratory. Now, it doesn't tell you exactly what the sensitivities would be, and the pharmacist would still have to send the urine off in the normal way. But if your local pathology advisor, such as PathWest, tells the pharmacist, okay, the most common antibiotic for use with this particular bug is, let's say, amoxicillin, then the patient can be given the first best guess, which, after all, is just what the GP does. So medicine is changing. Medicine is changing rapidly, and we must work together. GPs don't need to be treating simple things that pharmacists can treat. GPs are trained to manage complex conditions.
Thank you, Colin. And we should say Colin was previously the head of public health here. So that goes to that Queensland model, perhaps, where they are trialling pharmacists treating UTIs. David, you need to say something.
There's so many things. Firstly, the bulk billing issue is nonsense. Obviously, if it was a bulk billing practice, the patient would not have been $95 out of pocket. So clearly it wasn't a bulk billing
practice. But not everybody can see a bulk billing GP.
I'm just arguing with Colin about his not very well thought out point. The issue about the PCR testing. PCR testing is not available. It's a new test that's being developed. So how many years it's down the track before that would actually be useful is well beyond that. There are many people who have, you know, certainly older patients who actually have bugs in their urine all the time. It's symptoms and managing those patients is actually quite problematic. Would not be a useful thing just to do a PCR test on somebody like that.
Joe has called.
I had a baby in Glasgow, Scotland, 6 years ago, and there they have a service called the Minor Ailment Service, where you have to be registered with a GP, and then you register with your local pharmacist, who is obviously in contact with your GP. And what it means is for children aged 0 to 12, you can go to your local pharmacist and get any kind of thing you need for any of those minor ailments that children have all the time, like earache and eczema, strange rashes, that teething, all of those sorts of things. And of course, in Scotland, all prescriptions are free anyway. And I found it absolutely brilliant because when you're a working mother and a slight GP-ophobe and don't really like going to the doctor or don't have the time to make a doctor's appointment, you can just go to your local pharmacist and they give you the things for those minor ailments, or they'll refer you to your doctor. But what it does is it encourages people to actually attend to those issues, particularly for children, early and get them dealt with. And they've done some studies on this, and they think the positive health outcomes are worth more than the cost of the service, if you know what I mean. And the social welfare system in Scotland is improving because of this service. And I found it really excellent and really convenient, actually. And you do build up a relationship with your pharmacist and they get to know the child and so on. So I think it's a really good thing.
Thank you, Joe. David, as Joe pointed out, people who perhaps don't have much money put off going to the doctor, put off treating things because there is going to be an out-of-pocket expense.
Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of things there. NHS, it is free prescriptions. It's not free prescriptions here. So once you prescribe, there's a whatever cost it is to dispense. There is a whole bunch of issues about what's minor, what's not. The other thing is the likelihood that you're going to come out of a pharmacy here not upsold or attempted to be upsold for whatever vitamin supplement Blackmores is flogging that month. Very unlikely.
Let's talk about that, the conflicts of interest in community pharmacy, selling and dispensing products like supplements, probiotics. I know when I go to the doctor and they give me antibiotics, I go to get it at the chemist and often they say get a probiotic. And when I go back to the doctor says, no, don't ever take them. It's very, very confusing. Andrew, how do you deal with that?
There's an assumption that any natural medication comes without evidence. And that's just not the case. There are some prescription-only items actually that actually come from a plant-based background. So that in itself kind of puts to rest, hopefully, the idea that anything natural is actually not good. Further to that, a random sample of one person, my mum actually visited a cardiologist and she was asked to take a natural supplement. So it's not isolated to the pharmacy either. And if we look at the outcomes of healthcare, do natural medicines play a part? Clearly, for my mum's cardiologist, that was actually the case. I'm not saying in all cases. I'm not saying it has to be done. I'm just saying that they do have a place.
But shouldn't pharmacists have an obligation to only sell products scientifically proven to work?
Almost definitely. And if they're not doing it, then that needs to be looked at.
I mean, almost all the supplements that you see there have got no meaningful evidence behind them. So they've got no randomised controlled trial evidence. It's just rampant upselling for no benefit to the patient, expensive urine. Everything natural that ends up being proven to be of benefit is no longer just natural. It's called a drug, and it's then a prescribable, you know, product. I mean, yes, almost everything in medicine has been developed from something natural originally.
Ian says, I would be concerned if pharmacies were under the control of doctors. My experience with pharmacists is that they also provide a professional review of the prescribed medication and will call and discuss with the prescribing doctor where potential incorrect medication was prescribed. John has also texted in. He says, despite what your guests say, when you go to the doctor, you see the doctor. When you go to the pharmacy, you see a shop assistant. Andrew, your response to that? You're more than a shop assistant?
Yes, so you should be seen by a pharmacist. There are pharmacy assistants that work within pharmacy in the same way there are receptionists in a medical centre, but the actual delivery of healthcare is happening through the pharmacist.
Jan also says, are pharmacists part of the medical industry or the grocery sector? Cannot take them too seriously when they're selling everything from soap powder to shoes. Doubt I've ever seen our local pharmacist in the last 13 years, just pharmacy assistants, and they don't know her, let alone her family.
That shouldn't be happening.
Okay. And
it should be investigated.
Another text, consider the poor overworked staff pharmacist. No waiting at the chemist for a proper consult is just a pipe dream. Pharmacy Guild will bring in a fee for service, so getting a script won't be free unless Medicare pays a rebate. Nobody does anything for nothing.
And that's a fair comment. I think for pharmacy or for GPs for that matter, there does need to be some sort of payment for the time and the expertise that is offered at that point in time. So I don't see any problem with that.
Let's talk about fees pharmacists receive for dispensing. Stephen, can you just explain how they work?
So there are multiple fees that are paid, some paid by the government, some paid by the patient. And so the patient's co-payment is regulated. If you're a pensioner or healthcare card holder, you've got a $6 something or other co-payment up to a cap. And if you're not, it's $39 or something dollars like that. And that's from the patient. The pharmacist also gets a combination of fees from the government. There's a dispensing fee, so every time they read a prescription and work out what it actually says and get the drug from their store and so on. There's a dispensing fee. There are also other fees that are associated with each of the elements of that. So it accumulates and it can, I think, add up to about $17. Andrew would probably know better than me about the combination of fees that a pharmacist actually gets actually handing over those bills.
How much is that costing the taxpayer a year?
Oh, I haven't actually done the numbers on the actual pharmacist dispensing fees. But as we said right at the beginning, actually Australia has a very good health system and the pharmaceutical benefit scheme is a very good part of that. But it adds up a lot, and in many cases, the combination of these fees means it would be cheaper for a patient if the drug was not on the pharmaceutical benefit scheme, if it was just over the counter. They would actually be cheaper for the patient than actually what they have to pay the pharmacist.
As I understand it, dispensing fees in New Zealand are 3 monthly. Do we need to increase the amount of medication a patient can pick up each time they go to the pharmacist?
Certainly we do. It's just like we started this conversation about why does a patient have to go to the doctor every time they need a renewal of a script. We've also got to be able to say why do they need to only get 1 month or 2 months supply? Why can't they get more? And if they've got a chronic illness, why do they have to go back to the pharmacist every time? It's exactly the same issue.
Simon has called in. Good morning, Simon. Your wife is a GP. What did you want to say?
Correct. She's a practice owner, employs 13 doctors, several nurses, a huge staff and a huge payroll. Medical practice is in crisis, and what I'm probably going to give you is the perspective of a partner who listens to their professional partner when they come home at the end of the day, and they've had all the turmoil of being a GP, which is incredibly from doing a prostate check to, rebandaging an ulcerated wound. It's a huge array. It's the opposite of a specialist. So you're coping with everything from mental health to everything. Anyway, so it's a massive job and they are saints, let me tell you. Now, from the perspective of somebody who gets the story from a doctor, every night. It's the pharmacy groups are basically chasing the low-hanging fruit, the easy stuff that is highly profitable, that the GPs actually need to do those things to keep their doors open, because GP practice lives in this no-man's land between a hard business and a business which is actually controlled by the government. So what a GP can make is not to the up to their wits and skills, such as a retailer, like a pharmacy is a retailer. They have a totally different objective, which is a GP is all about creating healthcare and saving lives and adding to the welfare of the person who visits the GP. And a pharmacy is about flogging stuff. They're entirely different. So when a GP makes a referral to a specialist, they receive nothing for that other than the cost of the consultation. And I'll finish up with just a quick story because I don't want to take too much time. My wife told me a story just recently of checking somebody's blood pressure, and what in the process of checking somebody's blood pressure, spotted a melanoma or a suspect skin condition. She saved that person's life for taking their blood pressure.
Just a couple of things there. I have nothing but sympathy / empathy for Simon's wife as a business owner. It is hard yakka out there, and the difference with what Simon's wife is going through is that she needs to compete with the corporates the same way that Dr. Colin Hughes mentioned earlier on. I've said it before and I say it again, the Guild would be more than happy to co-sign a letter that puts medical practices back into the ownership of doctors, and I think that would be the best result for the healthcare system.
Jane has also called in.
In the whole subject, I just question the privacy that's available at a pharmacy. I did have an incident where I was just filling a script and the pharmacist asked in a very loud voice why I needed this medication, which was not the normal reason. And I just questioned, I didn't know what to reply. It was my local pharmacy. There might be people I know in there. So how can something else be private about, people talking about what it might be, addiction, whatever. Pharmacies tend to be space poor because it's taken up with retail things. And I'm just not sure how that works to push more stuff to the pharmacy that maybe is best done in private.
And Jane, your pharmacy doesn't have one of those consultation rooms?
Well, no, I don't think they do. But that wasn't, that's not the point. Just to go there and be questioned about why you're taking something, which in my case was something that you normally have for something else, I take it for something different, and to have to explain that to the pharmacist why I was taking this was weird. But, that's done over the counter, and I don't know how that process will work with people doing sensitive things, if that makes sense.
So, that's one of the reasons general practice is set up with separate rooms that are properly soundproofed so you can do privacy. I work in a privacy-constrained environment, but normally people are coming in with an emergency and they'll sort of put up with that. But they shouldn't have to put up with second-rate privacy just because of, supposedly for convenience or access. And I don't think they will get the right level of care.
I also wonder what impact those retail giants like Chemist Warehouse have done to the landscape. They're really busy.
Well, but they're all owned by pharmacists. I mean, supposedly these ginormous conglomerates are all just pharmacy-owned small businesses.
Stephen, your thoughts on that?
So Chemist Warehouse it has to meet the ownership rules and is significantly discounting. So many people find that really, really good that they can get discounts on their pharmaceuticals that they require. I think there are strengths and weaknesses with the Chemist Warehouse model, but it's certainly people are voting with their feet and going to it.
I don't think you'd see things like community health nurses in pharmacies. When my kids were little, living in Queensland, I used to take them along to that for checkups. Do you have that kind of service, Andrew?
Can I just say with Chemist Warehouse, Joe, that look, and what both David and Stephen said is completely correct. They are owned by a pharmacist. And in a free market economy, price competition will always exist, but we just can't allow it to happen at the cost of healthcare.
David?
So I want to go back to, you know, the ideas of privacy, having the right rooms, actually the right environment to actually take histories and do examinations. The other thing that you actually have to have is a cognitive mindset that means that you're actually able to diagnose things. So we spend 10 years, whatever branch of medicine we go into, basically learning how to diagnose and not get sidetracked by things or just plug for the obvious thing that seems okay in front of us, or just being fixated on one thing and not having a broader picture. That is not how pharmacists are trained, and there is no way that you can do an online course for a few weeks that actually changes that cognitive ability that you develop over a long period of time.
Helen says, my pharmacy seems to have more time to give than my bulk billing GP, so I feel I would get more time and info from my pharmacist. Really quickly, looking at the regions, 50 country towns in Australia have a pharmacy but no doctor. Is there not scope for pharmacists to be doing a bit more in the regions, Stephen?
That's exactly where we started when we first did our work at Grattan on this. We started with rural issues, and we wrote a report called Access All Areas, and it was this issue that pharmacists are much more widespread and much more available in small country towns than GPs. And we recognised that there are many things that could be done at the pharmacy that were not, and people were missing out on healthcare because of those restrictions. And so that's exactly where we started on this issue, and it's a really, really important point, Joe.
Thank you so much to all of you. Dr. David Mountain, ex-AMA WA President, Andrew Niao, WA Branch President of the Pharmacy Guild, and Stephen Duckett, Director, Health Program at the Grattan Institute.